History Makers with Matt Prater.
Coming off of drugs, you're going to have emotional problems, but I kept chasing after God.
And he's using this vehicle to bring people out of the dark into the light.
And I went forward and I knelt at the front, and it was a radical conversion experience.
And that's where the big change happened, and that's where we decided we're going to use our music for God, we're going to change our songs.
When I was about 25-year-old, I was busted and into jail, and it was there that I came to the Lord.
History Makers with Matt Prater.
Hi and welcome to History Makers. I'm Matt Prater. Today we're chatting with Duncan Robinson, who is the author of a new book called Full Phoenix Rising. He's a pastor. He's worked in Christian radio for many years, and he's just an all-round good guy. We're going to hear a bit of his story today. Welcome along, mate. Tell us your background. Where were you born and raised?
Oh, Matt, great to be here. Listen, I was born in Malaysia. My parents were over there as metallurgists, and then raised in Sydney. I've honestly got a pretty bland upbringing. I was born in Malaysia is the only cool part of the story. Raised in Sydney, went to a private school in Sydney, got married in Sydney, and then moved off to Phoenix, Arizona with my wife.
Oh, really? Okay. There you go. Well, let's backtrack a bit. Was your upbringing like a religious upbringing? Or?
Yeah, that's a good question. We weren't. So back in the day, mate, if you wanted to go to a private school, you had to be, if you wanted kind of the inside track to get into a private school, you got a reference from a pastor.
Okay.
And my parents really wanted both their children to go to private schools. And so we secretly snuck into a uniting church and pretended to be very involved there. Got a reference from that pastor. And then when we got the reference from the pastor, we kind of left that church because mum's like, well, we got what we needed. It was years later, about year nine, I said to my mum, hey, I want to meet some girls. And I hear that girls are at youth group. So she rang one of her closest friends, a lady named Mrs. Keeler. And she said, well, there's this big youth group at Christchurch St. Ives. You should send them along to that. And I went along to that youth group and met some girls and fell in love with Jesus.
There you go. Rest is history.
Well, mate, they keep saying that you should never flirt to convert, but worked for me.
So was there a dramatic change in your life after that event, or was it just kind of a slow walk into Christianity?
Oh, gosh, man. No, I'm not that intelligent. I think I was a black sheep for a very, very, very long time. I think it's part of the story that I talk about in my new book, but like, I think my life is filled with mistakes and errors. And seeing the grace of God at work with a very young man who had very little clue about Jesus and how that shaped me over many years into a better person today.
Well, let's hear a bit more of your journey. Like, what did you do after school? Did you go to uni? Did you work straight away? What did you do?
So I did get a job as a business consultant for a Big Five accounting firm called Ernst & Young. And at the same time, I was studying computer science at university, which eventually became IT. I think while I was doing that, I realized how much I hated being like a tech support guy. And I really loved basketball, and I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. And one of my pastors said to me, you'd actually make a really great youth pastor. So I took 3 months off and I went to the USA to interview for a job as a sporting scout in a basketball team.
Wow.
And then while I was over there, I said, listen, I'll volunteer for 3 months for a church. Just like have me as an intern and I'll want to do the youth ministry stuff and I just want to see if I like it. Anyway, it turns out I hated being a sporting scout for a basketball team and I really loved working for a church. So I came back and then went to Bible college and got trained to do all of that. Mm-hmm. And ended up kind of falling into pastoral ministry in a Presbyterian church in Sydney.
Oh, very cool. Okay. And I know that you ended up in Christian radio at some stage. Tell us about your journey into Christian radio.
No, that's a bit long and convoluted. But the long and the short of it is this. My wife and I eventually moved to Phoenix, Arizona for 5 years where we were church planting. We felt a call on our hearts to come back to Australia to plant a church.
Yeah.
We did that. Day one of opening the church that we had partnered with in the USA, their senior pastor was found in trouble for doing a bunch of bad stuff.
Okay.
So the funding dried up. 4 weeks into the church plant, my father got cancer.
Oh.
And slowly over the next 16 months kind of passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to the end of the process of trying to plant that church and just realized we had to close the doors on it. Nothing was working. Nothing was happening. And so I sat down and I wrote this kind of piece that was like 18 reasons why the church plant failed, as kind of a cathartic process to express everything that was kind of wrong and troubling in life. And I got a call from a guy named Don Redden out of Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, mate, listen, I think you'd actually be really good on Christian radio if you ever thought about getting into it. And I was like, I haven't, mate. And he said, listen, I think that there's going to be a job coming up in Sydney and you should put your hat in the ring for it. And so I was like, oh, okay. Well, you know, and I was locuming for another church in the area, which is actually the church I'm currently at now.
Yeah.
And I said to him, listen, this job's going to come up. I think I'm going to put my hat in the ring for it. So I threw my hat in the ring and, you know, the interview process dwindled down to about two people. And I said to my wife, listen, I think I'm about to be a breakfast radio host. She's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, like seriously. And so then I got the call and they said, listen, we want you to be on Hope 103.2 as the breakfast radio host. And I was like, okay. And I remember sitting in the boss's office, guy's still there, Dwayne, and he said to me at the end of the shift, he said, mate, listen, other people from other radio stations were tuning in for a colossal failure. I didn't want to tell you that before you started the show, but you don't often put a complete rookie in the breakfast shift because it's kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been getting calls from the other radio stations and they said, you're really good. And they want to know where they found talent like this. And I was like, oh, maybe I can do this.
Oh, fantastic. And how many years were you doing that for?
Mate, I think I was on Brekkie Radio there for about 5 years.
Wow, well
just
done,
an
mate.
Absolutely extraordinary experience. Mate, you know this as well as I do, is that there's something powerful that happens where you get to share the love of Jesus over the radio waves. Like when you're listening to radio, you're often in a safe, private space, and
yeah.
So you don't have any of the barriers, any of the kind of protections that you might do when you're out hanging out with friends. Like it's your safe space.
Mm.
And so there's a real power in being able to share the gospel through that medium.
Well, mate, I applaud you, mate. You're amazing. But I want you to tell us a bit about what it was like getting up every morning that time of the day and being happy. How did you do it?
Oh, man. I mean, I think that's probably the saddest and hardest part about the story. It's probably one of the reasons why I'm not doing breakfast radio anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you're waking up at 3:30 in the morning. And to do that, I had to kind of engineer my life around that. So we had blackout blinds in our bedroom.
Yeah.
I would go to bed at 7 p.m. I would often sleep in a separate bedroom to my wife.
Mm.
You know, my kids had to be quiet. And the reason I did that was because I needed to hit my peak between 6 and 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And so I needed the good sleep and I needed the good rest. And I wanted to go on air and be this really upbeat, positive dad. But behind the scenes, it meant that I had to sacrifice a lot of relationship with my own family,
yeah,
who worked on a different schedule to me, just so I could be positive at the time that they needed me to be,
yeah,
positive.
Yeah.
You know, and eventually that kind of takes an attrition on everything.
Mm.
And so we got to this place where I was like, I'm being my best version of dad on air, but I'm not being the best version of dad at home.
Wow.
And I would prefer to be the best version of dad at home. I would prefer to be the best husband at home. And whilst I feel like the skill set that I have for radio is like the perfect fit for me and my personality, and I did, like I felt like it fit like a glove, there was an attrition that was going on behind the scenes that meant that it wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
And so at some stage, I just had to say, it's either my family or this job. And really, my family is the most important thing.
Yeah.
So I want to prioritize that. And, you know, we say this probably a lot, Matt, that, you know, family is our first point of ministry.
Yeah. Yeah. So true.
And so we want that to be the healthiest and the best possible thing. And that doesn't mean that I should have an ego and say, I want to keep, you know, a pivot shift for a breakfast radio show in Sydney. I'd prefer to keep a beautiful wife and wonderful kids.
Yeah. It's good, mate. Well, I did breakfast radio for a couple of years, and I felt like I was jet lagged the whole time, and I loved it.
Yeah.
But I know exactly where you're coming from, mate. And you know, it's good to hear you share a bit of your journey. Now we will get to your book in a moment, but I do want to just get you to share briefly about our time in Vietnam. You and I got to go on this trip with Christian Blind Mission, or CBM, to see people get these cataract surgeries, and people were donating towards people getting these cataract surgeries. Wasn't that the most amazing trip to Vietnam, hey?
Mate, extraordinary. It was one of the great moments, I think, of my life. I still tell the story. In fact, it features a couple of times in the book.
Okay.
But just the opportunity to get over to another country and experience a different culture.
Yeah.
Very different to our own. And then you go into this like kind of makeshift eye surgery studio. And there's a doctor in there who literally only does this surgery over and over again. Does it better than any Western doctor. And he performs these eye surgeries that completely and radically change an individual's life for the better overnight. It's the most amazing ministry that I've had a chance to be a part of.
Yeah, it was such a great trip. And it was good to get to know you back then. And we've been, you know, Facebook friends ever since. And I've just been really excited to hear about this new book of yours, Full Phoenix Rising. Tell us all about it.
Well, mate, it funnily enough, the title came out of the experience that we had in Vietnam. So there's another two radio hosts down there, Lucy and Kel, who I am also friends with. Mm-hmm. And that friendship kind of formed on that trip. And we were staying in this giant hotel. I don't know if you... Do you remember the giant hotel we were staying in?
It was awesome.
Yeah, incredible. Well, so there's a whole bunch of Vietnamese people who stay in there who were there as factory workers, but there were also a number of Russian people who were working on a private military base in the area.
Oh.
And one of the nights, I was walking the hallway to try and find Lucy and Kel and catch up with them, and I walked around the corner and there was this giant Russian man in gold hot pants. And he's talking to Lucy and he's trying to convince Lucy to come into his room and drink vodka. And Lucy is very resistant. And Kel's trying to play defense and kind of convince the guy, hey, listen, she doesn't want to be a part of this. She's got to go back to her room. And so I jump in and I start, you know, negotiating with the guy and saying, well, you know, maybe we can come in and hang out with you, but Lucy really has to go back to her bedroom. You know.
Yeah.
We're trying to get her to safety. So he goes, I'm going to go in and get more drinking glasses, and he disappears into his room, and then so we say to Luz, run, like, just get out of here.
Yeah.
So she takes off, and now it's just me and Kel left with this giant Russian who's literally only wearing gold hot pants.
Oh, my goodness.
And so he comes out with these, you know, shot glasses and, like, the most gigantic bottle of vodka I've ever seen in my life. And he's like, you must drink with us. You must drink with us. And I'm like, listen, mate, not really keen to have a glass and drink with you. And he's like, I'll show you some of the Russian fighter jets that I've been working on, right? And now I'm thinking to myself, now we're going to see secret military base secrets? Like, this is very bad. So he goes back into his room and Kel basically yells, Phoenix Rising, and takes off. And I'm like, oh, gosh, like, Kel's running. I can't be left alone with this guy. Like,
yeah.
So I start running as well. Anyway, we finally make it back to our area. And I say to him, mate, why did you yell Phoenix Rising? And he says, oh, you know, it's like this thing we do on our show that, like, when something bad happens, it's like a phoenix rising from the ashes.
Ah.
And, like, it's, you know, like, I think it's that story that we see often in Scripture of, like, death and rebirth. Like... And so we adopted it for our show, you know, we added to it and we called it Full Phoenix Rising. So when we have a complete disaster, there's this kind of narrative of learning through those mistakes and being kind of recreated in a new and fresh way. And so that kind of then became the genesis for this idea of how does Jesus's real-time grace play out in our lives. And what I mean by that is when you look at Scripture, you see Jesus working really graciously with disciples through mistakes and through difficulties and through challenges. But what we can often do is kind of retroactively apply grace to a situation. So we can look back at history and see all the different ways that God's at work through that, and we graciously redeem it. But the way that Jesus actually works is in the moment, in the muck and the mire. And in the very event happening, that he kind of works it towards his good.
And I love the fact that it says, you know, full Phoenix writing, real-time grace at the speed of Jesus. So just unpack that for us.
I think one of the challenges that we have is when an individual walks into a church, you think of the amount of, like, trust capital that you need to deposit to walk into a space that you don't really know and you don't really understand and you don't know the people in there and you don't know the rules in there, you don't know how to play any of those rules, is an enormous amount of trust capital. Now, when a person doesn't know the rules and then makes a mistake in the room, we get frustrated because, hey, you don't know how to do church.
Mm.
It's not, though, how Jesus operates. Jesus is okay with people making mistakes. And that's not Jesus embracing sin. Like, you know, he's not living a life of gratuitous liberty. But what he's saying is that, no, I understand that you will make mistakes, but I want to walk alongside of you as a guide and push you in a better direction.
Mm.
And so what that means for a church is, what if in a new season and in a new ministry, we learn to operate church in a slower and messier way, where we walk at a speed that an individual who has no concept of what Jesus is calling them to has permission to make mistakes, where we don't glorify errors, but we acknowledge them and we allow a person to move through them and learn from them so that they might walk in the footsteps of Jesus in a way where there is no shame and condemnation, but restoration and reconciliation that we find at the feet of Jesus.
No, oh, I love it, mate. It sounds fantastic. So we're chatting with Duncan Robinson, author of the new book, Full Phoenix Rising, Real-Time Grace at the Feet of Jesus. And the book is available wherever you get good books. And, mate, is there a website that you can point people to as well?
Well, I do have my own website, which is a conglomeration of all the different things that I do, and you can find that at duncanrobinson.net.
Okay, and you're pastoring a church as well. What's the church? Tell us all about the church.
So the church is called Northgate Church. It's in Belrose, which is on the northern beaches of Sydney. I've been here for 5 years as a senior pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Mate, Church of Christ Church. So, you know, we're into spiritual formation.
Yeah, awesome.
Which John Mark Comer has made cool these days.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dallas Willard did it first, but it was a bit more dorky.
That's funny. I love it. So good. Well, it's so good to catch up with you, Duncan, after all these years. I reckon you're a history maker. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, brother. Much appreciated.
If you'd like to hear this conversation again, listen online anytime at historymakersradio.com. There you'll also find links to all of our social media channels, and you can subscribe to our iTunes podcast. History Makers is a faith-based ministry, and we want to thank everyone for their generous support. If you've got a suggestion of anyone we should interview, send us an email, info@historymakersradio.com. God bless. I'm Matt Prater, and my challenge to you now is to go and make history.